Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Chapter entitled Description of the Varnashram System, text number 33. Srinam Nirikshana Sparsha Samlapa Shwelanadikam Pranino Mituni Bhutan Agrihasto Kratas Chajet Srinam Nirikshana Sparsha Samlapa Shwelanadikam Pranino Mitinu Pranino Mituni Bhutan Agrihasto Kratascha Jet Srinam Nirikshana Sparsha Samlapa Shwelanadikam Pranino Mituni Bhutan Agrihasto Kratascha Jet Srinam Nirikshana Sparsha Samlapa Shwelanadikam Pranino Mituni Bhutan Agrihasto Kratascha Jet Srinam, in relation to women. Nirikshana, glancing. Sparsha, touching. Samlapa, conversing. Shwelana, joking or sporting. Adikam, and so on. Pranina, living entities. Mituni Bhutan, engaged in sex. Agrihasta, a sannyasi. Vanaprastha or brahmachari. Agrata, first of all. Chajet, should give up. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Those who are not married, sannyasis, vanaprastas, and brahmacharis, should never associate with women by glancing, touching, conversing, joking, or sporting. Neither should they ever associate with any living entity engaged in sexual activities. Translation responsibly. Those who are not married. Sannyasis, vanaprastas, and brahmacharis should never associate with women by glancing, touching, conversing, joking, or sporting. Neither should they ever associate with any living entity engaged in sexual activities. Purport. Pranina indicates all living entities, whether birds, bees, or human beings. Among most species of life, sexual intercourse is preceded by diverse mating rituals. In human society, all types of entertainment, books, music, films, and all places of amusement, restaurants, shopping centers, resorts, are designed to stimulate the sexual urge and create an aura of romance. One who is not married, a sannyasi, brahmachari, or vanaprastha, should rigidly avoid anything related to sex and, of course, should never see any living entity, whether bird, insect, or human, engaging in the various phases of sexual intercourse. When a man jokes with a woman, an intimate, sexually charged atmosphere is immediately created. And this should also be avoided for those aspiring to practice celibacy. Even a householder who becomes attached to such activities will also fall down into the darkness of ignorance. Omagyan, Timarandasya, Ginamjino, Shalakaya, Chakshun Militam Yena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya, Manobishtam, Stapitam, Yena, Bhutale, Swayam Rupa, Kadamayam, Dadati Swa, Vedantikam. Vamsha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram,
Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, this chapter, Lord Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and this is called Uddhava Gita. So it is the Lord himself is giving instructions to Uddhava just before he leaves this planet. It is described in the Bhagavatam that Uddhava was living in Dwarka with Krishna, and he is the topmost member of the Yadu dynasty. Means that he is the most intimate associate of Krishna in Dwarka. So he was associating with Krishna very intimately, and it is said he is a disciple of Brihaspati. So he is extremely qualified personality. He is so qualified that Krishna used to say to Uddhava, before he made decisions, he would say to Uddhava, "What do you think?" And he would ask Uddhava for his opinion. And Uddhava would give Krishna counsel. Not that the Lord needs counsel, but he plays this role in order to endear his devotees to him. So his devotees become more attached to him. So then he would always say to Uddhava, "What do you think? What should we do?" Well, then they would have discussions, and Uddhava was extremely learned. Uddhava was the most advanced devotee in Dwarka, and he was completely attached to Krishna. He was so attached to Krishna that he took on Krishna's duty, which means Krishna's he took on Krishna's complexion. He developed the same, his complexion turned the same color as Krishna. Krishna is Shama Sundara, he has a beautiful bluish color and form. Then Uddhava also appeared to be that color. Because his bhav was so absorbed, he was so absorbed in Krishna, in bhav, in such incredible attachment to Krishna, that he also turned the same color as Krishna. This was how deeply attached he was. And he would only wear the clothes which were worn by Krishna. Just like when the deity's clothes become old, the Prabhupada said we can give them to the children, the devotee children, and they can wear them as Mahaprasad. They can wear the deity, just like we wear the garlands which have been offered to Prabhupada or to the deities. Right? We wear these articles and we become purified by wearing those articles. So Prabhupada said when the clothes of the deities are old, then we can give them to the devotee children, and the devotee children can wear them. And they become purified by wearing the deities' clothes. So Uddhava, he would only wear the Mahaprasada Krishna. He wouldn't wear any clothes. So he looked just like Krishna. He wore blue, golden dhoti, just like Krishna. Had the same complexion as Krishna. He'd always wear the garlands that Krishna had worn, like that. And he would only eat directly the remnants which were left by Krishna. So whatever Krishna would take after he'd finished his meal, then Uddhava would take the remnants directly that Krishna had eaten, Mahaprasada. So he was totally absorbed in Krishna. He had no other thought than Krishna. He's the topmost devotee. And then Uddhava also thought, he thought, I cannot imagine that anyone could love Krishna as much as I love Krishna. Just like when you love someone, you can't think that anyone else could love them as much as you do. You think, I love this person so much that no one else could love, anyone could love this person as much as I love them. So Uddhava was thinking like that, and then Krishna sent him to Vrindavan. He said, you go to Vrindavan and you meet the Brijbasis. And when you meet the Brijbasis, you give them a message from me. So Uddhava, he travelled and he met the Brijbasis, and then he met the Gopis. And then he gave a message to the Gopis on behalf of Krishna. And then when he came back to Dwarka, Krishna said, what took place when you're in Vrindavan? And Uddhava said, I realize that I have no love for you. Because compared to the Brijbasis, my love is insignificant. Their love for you is beyond my understanding, beyond estimation. And so much that he was appreciating the love of the residents of Vrindavan, and especially the Gopis, but then he said to Krishna, I want to take birth as a kundalata, as a creeper in Vrindavan, like a vine or a creeper on the ground in Vrindavan, so that the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, will step on my head and I will get the dust of their lotus feet. So he took that benediction from Krishna. And he eternally resides in Vrindavan as a kundalata, as a creeper next to one of the kunds. There's one kund there called Uddhava Kund, which is just behind Kusum Sarovar in Vrindavan, in near Govardhan Hill. And the big, beautiful lake in Vrindavan. So at that place, then Uddhava resides there eternally. As a creeper, like that. So Uddhava, he was living in Dwarka with Krishna, and then he understood that Krishna was about to leave this world because he saw there were inauspicious omens in Dwarka. Dwarka was beginning, there was inauspicious omens beginning to manifest within Dwarka. Now this is not possible. How can inauspicious omens take place when Krishna is personally present? So Uddhava came to Krishna and he said, I see inauspicious omens. He said, this means that you will soon finish your earthly pastimes. You will soon leave this world. He said to Krishna, he said, this will be too painful for me to witness. It will be too painful for me to see you leave this world and for me to be left in this world without you. So he said, please let me leave this world before you leave this world. But Krishna said, no. He said, I have some service for you to do. So what is higher? What we want or what Krishna wants? What is higher? What we want or what the guru wants? Right? So this is the test. This is the test. Every disciple has to face this test. In our lives, we will come, all of us will have to face this test at some point in time. What we want or what the guru wants? What we want or what Krishna wants? And we will be tested. So Uddhava, he wanted to leave. He did not want to be in this world without Krishna. Because if Krishna left this world, how could he bear to live? But Krishna said, no, you have to stay. When I leave, you have to stay here. I have some service for you to do. So this is the principle of Krishna consciousness. This is what Srila Prabhupada taught us, especially in ISKCON. And that's why ISKCON is empowered to spread Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. That's why Srila Prabhupada was empowered to spread the Sankirtan movement all around the world. Why? Because he understood this principle. Whatever the guru wants, that is the highest principle. Right? Whatever Krishna wants, that is the highest principle. Right? We must surrender. Krishna says, Mam ekam sharanam raja. Savadaman parijaja. Savadaman means everything. Everything you're attached to in this world. Right? Parijaja. You have to give it up. Right? Mam ekam sharanam raja. Sharana means surrender. Right? Krishna says, surrender unto me. Right? You have to surrender unto Krishna. Right? You have to surrender unto your guru. This is Krishna consciousness. And that's how you become empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. That's why Prabhupada is empowered. That's why ISKCON is empowered. Because Prabhupada expected this from his followers, from his disciples, from his grand disciples. Right? He expected this mood of surrender. And that's how we become empowered to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Because sometimes we have to do the most difficult things. Right? The most difficult services we're asked to do by our spiritual master, by our spiritual authorities. Right? And we have to surrender to those services. And by surrendering to those services, then you become empowered to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. So, Uddhava, he was asked by Krishna, you must stay in this world, I have service for you to do. Right? This is what pure devotional service is about. So, Krishna spoke to Uddhava just before he left this world. Just before Dwarka sunk into the ocean, right? And before they went to Prabhas, the Yadavas went to Prabhas Kshetra and had a fratricidal war and killed each other. Just before that, then Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. That is what this conversation is in the 11th canto. It is the conversation which Krishna and Uddhava had just before Krishna left this world. And then Krishna said to Uddhava at the end of it, he said, now I want you to go to Badrik Ashram in the Himalayas, because there are many sages there who are my devotees. But during my pastimes, when Krishna was on earth for 125 years, he did not have time, or not that he didn't have time, but he did not travel to Badrik Ashram during that period. And therefore, the sages in Badrik Ashram did not receive Krishna's association. So he said to Uddhava, I've spoken to you, this Uddhava Gita, this knowledge. Now I want you to go to Badrik Ashram and give this knowledge to these sages. So then, when Krishna had finished speaking the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava circumambulated Krishna, paid his obeisances, and with tears in his eyes he left and he began to travel to Badrik Ashram. This is pure devotional service. But then he turned back. Because when he was travelling, then he heard that all the Yadavas had gone to Prabhas Kshetra. So then he turned back and he went back to Prabhas Kshetra. And then when he arrived at Prabhas Kshetra after the war had finished, then Krishna was sitting underneath a banyan tree. This is described in Canto 11 or 12. Then he was sitting underneath a banyan tree, and then Uddhava came at that time and he sat down, and then Krishna spoke to him again. And at that time Maitreya Muni, he came and he sat next to Uddhava and Krishna, and he heard the conversation. And that conversation is the third canto and the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. Like that conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. So then after that, then Uddhava was instructed by Krishna, now go to Badrik Ashram. So he went to Badrik Ashram. Then Maitreya Muni began to travel. Vidura met Uddhava in the beginning of the third canto. Now he met Uddhava, and then he said to Uddhava, please tell me what it is that Krishna told you before he left this world. And he said, you should go to Maitreya. He will tell you. So then Uddhava sent Vidura to Maitreya, and then Maitreya instructed Vidura. And then Uddhava went to Bhadrikashram and he instructed the sages. So that is what this conversation is, the Uddhava Gita. Now, specifically, Krishna is giving instruction to Uddhava about Varnashram Dharma. What is Varnashram Dharma? Varna and Ashrama. These are the eight divisions for human life, right? Srila Prabhupada explains human life begins with Varna Ashrama. Right? If people are not practicing Varna and Ashrama, it is not human life. Right? They're not human beings. Right? You only become a human being when you begin to practice Varna and Ashrama. So now this is Krishna himself instructing us how to practice Varna and Ashrama. So the Varnas means the social divisions. Right? Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahmana. Right? Now Prabhupada explains that these divisions are naturally there within human society. We see, even amongst human society, we see naturally there are these divisions. Right? You see some people are like Brahmanas. Can someone can just close the door? Just otherwise I get distracted. We see that naturally some people are like Brahminical personalities, like intellectual people, like teachers and professors and like this, these kind of things. And then we see some people are naturally like Kshatriyas. Yeah, they like to control things, they like to administrate things, they like to take positions of leadership. And then we see people are like Vaishyas. Yeah, people like to make money. Right? And then we see that some people are like Shudras. Yeah, they have particular skills and artistic talents and they use those talents to serve the other members of society. So this is the natural position of Varnas. Previously, before Kali Yuga, we would see these Varnas were very prominent. Right? You could see someone was a Brahmana, someone was a Kshatriya, someone was a Vaishya, someone was a Sudra. In Kali Yuga, it's very hard to see these things in their like a pure form. People have become very much mixed up. Some people are like something like a Brahmana and a Kshatriya. Some people are like a Vaishya and a Sudra. It's all mixed up. It's not so easy in Kali Yuga to work these things out. And Prabhupada has explained that in Kali Yuga now, basically we have Vaishyas and Sudras. That's basically what we have. If you look at the world now, it's basically Vaishyas and Sudras. Basically, some people are smart, they know how to make money, and they control everyone else and make everyone work hard. Right? That's basically what we have. Right? There's Vaishyas, the people who work out how to control everything, right, and how to make a lot of money, and everyone else works hard for them. Right? So Shudras and Vaishyas. That's basically what society is now. No, there's not, and there's not really any Kshatriyas. Right? Kshatriya means, if you read in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, Krishna says Kshatriya means Virya. Virya means? Huh? Powerful, strong. Right? Kshatriya is supposed to be strong and powerful. Lead the charge on the battlefield. Not like the Kshatriyas we have these days. Right? Stay at home in America and press buttons. Yeah. Put George W. Bush on the front of the battlefield. Yeah. See how brave he is. No, they won't go. Not brave. No, this is not Kshatriya. Kshatriya goes and fights. He doesn't stay back and send everyone else out to get killed. That is weakling. That's not Kshatriya. Like that. So we don't really have real Kshatriyas, real Brahmanas, even Vaishyas and Sudras. Everything's very mixed up in Kali Yuga. We don't really have the pure form of what we had previously. Prabhupada says mainly these days you have Vaishya and Sudra. Right? But this division is naturally there in society. People naturally have particular aptitudes or proclivity to work in one of these particular orders. So Krishna created like that and is designed to be like that. That is how human society should be organized. Right? And then we have the spiritual divisions. Spiritual divisions means ashrama. Right? What does ashram mean? Okay. Comes from the word ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. like that. So it is a place of shelter, ashrama. Brahmachari, ashram. Right? Place of shelter means a place where you take shelter of who? Who's your shelter? Krishna. Right? So it's your brahmachari ashram. You're in the ashram taking shelter of Guru and Krishna. Right? That is what your ashram is for, to take shelter of Guru and Krishna. So you're in the brahmachari ashram. Right? You're in the grihasta ashram. Right? You're in the vanaprastha ashram, the sannyas ashram. You're taking shelter of Krishna. And each of the ashrams is meant for one purpose. And what is the purpose of an ashram? Why are we brahmacharis? Why are we grihastas? Why are we vanaprastas? Why are we sannyasis? Why? What's our purpose? There's one purpose. Yeah, to become Krishna conscious, to advance in spiritual life. That's the point. Why are you in the brahmachari ashram? To make spiritual advancement, to become Krishna conscious. Why are you in the grihastha ashram? To make spiritual advancement, to become Krishna conscious. Why are you in the vanaprastha ashram or the sannyasa ashram? For this one purpose. That is the purpose. Right? So this is how society is divided. We divide society in four varnas, according to people's natures, and then four ashrams. Right? Now, traditionally, it is said that the Shudras, they only have one ashram. What is their ashram? If you're a Shudra, what is your ashram? Whole life. Grihastha, right? That's all Shudras are, they're Grihasthas. They don't go to Gurukul. They're just Grihasthas. It means, say, you are a cloth merchant. Like you go to India, right? And there are cloth merchants. And they sell cloth, right? So this is their trade, right? So then, the children, they grow up in the shop, right? They learn how to be cloth merchants, right? And then when they get to a particular age, they take over the business, right? And then they get old, and then like that. So they're grihasthas the whole time. They never leave the home. But the Vaishyas, they have two ashrams, traditionally. What are the two ashrams of the Vaishyas? Right? Brahmachari and Grihastha. They go to the Gurukul, they get trained by the spiritual master, the boys, from the age of 5 to 25. They get trained by the Guru, and then they come back, and they get married, and they live with the family and run the family business, the Vaishyas. Generally, in traditional times, it means they would do agriculture, right? And trade, like that. And cow protection. Krishna says, go raksha, in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. That was traditionally what they did. That was their activity. So that was the Vaishya's ashrams. They would live with the Guru, and then they would go and live with their family for the rest of their life. Now the girls, traditionally speaking, did not go to the ashram of the Guru. Prabhupada created the Brahmacharini ashram. Before Prabhupada came, there was no such thing as a Brahmacharini. You look in the Vedas, there's no word, Brahmacharini. Prabhupada created it. Because when he came to the West, then he had to adopt his preaching according to time, place and circumstance, so that people could make spiritual advancement. So he created Brahmachari Ashram, Brahmacharini Ashram, so that people can make advancement. But traditionally, the girls would stay at home and be trained by their mother, and then by the mother of the boy that they were going to marry. The Prabhupada says that for the women, they have two duties or two religious principles they must master in order to satisfy their husband. What are the two principles? Cooking and singing.
Yeah.
No. Cooking is right. You got half of it right. It's not cooking and singing. Otherwise, most girls would not get married. Like that. No, it is cooking and...
cleaning.
No. Nice try. Cooking and Who's that? Yeah, sweet words. Or technically, Prabhupada says chastity. These are the two principles which the girls must learn in Vedic culture. They become a good cook, right? Because if you're a good cook, you basically control your husband. That is the principle. Because the husband will be satisfied if the wife is a good cook. Then he will not; his mind will be peaceful. He'll be satisfied. Vedic culture is very simple. In modern culture, we think, oh, we have to do this and we have to do that, and so many complicated things. But basically, the husband just becomes satisfied if the wife is cooking nicely for him. And then, chastity. Chastity means that the wife is dedicated to the husband. Not that her mind is wandering to other men. But she dedicates herself to her husband. And then the husband feels satisfied. Because the wife is dedicated to him. Not that her consciousness is always going to other men. Like that. So this is the basic principle. This is what the girls would primarily learn. And as Veda Priya said, it describes in the ninth canto, in the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, that Sita Devi, the wife of Lord Ram, one of the qualities which is most important for women is to have sweet speech. It means they have to speak very sweetly to the husband. Then the husband's mind becomes pacified and satisfied. And then family life, home life, grihastha life becomes very peaceful. Because the wife is speaking very sweetly, she cooks very nicely, the husband is very satisfied, very peaceful, and he will automatically fulfill all of her desires. It says that Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, she resides in a home where the husband and wife do not quarrel. So this is what grihastha should aspire for. Not to quarrel like that. Practically impossible, but should aspire for. Like that. Chanakya Pandit says when the grihasthas are arguing, he said it is like the rainy season. Before the rainy season, the clouds come and they make noise, but there's no rain. So no one takes it seriously. So Prabhupada says that is grihastha life. When the husband and wife are fighting, no one takes it seriously. Just some rumbling going on. But it doesn't mean very much. It's just what happens like that. So then, the Vaishyas, they have two ashrams, and then the Kshatriyas, they have three ashrams. What are the three ashrams of the Kshatriyas, traditionally speaking? Yeah. The Kshatriyas, they would get trained as brahmacharis, then they become grihasthas, and then they take vanaprastha. Just like you see in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, you see Dhritarashtra, he went to the forest. The Pandavas went to the forest. There's vanaprastha. Like that. And then the brahmanas, they traditionally have four ashrams. What are the four ashrams? Very good. The brahmanas have four ashrams, right? Brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. Only the brahmanas take sannyas, traditionally speaking. Now, the brahmanas, Prabhupada mentions, that the brahmanas actually, they don't usually go through grihastha life. If someone's actually a brahmana, he usually doesn't get married. Because brahmana means one who is self-realized. So self-realized, he doesn't need to get married. Married is just about the body. Srila Prabhupada says we need marriage as much as we need a material body. Hands up if you need a material body. You don't need one, but you've got one. Why have you got one? Because you want one. That's why you've got a material body. You want it. That's why you've got it. If you want a spiritual body, Krishna will give it to you now. But if you want a material body, if you want to be independent, then you get a material body. If you want to be independent from Krishna. So that's why we have a material body. So you have a material body, then you get married. Because you think you're the body, then you get married. Right? But Prabhupada says you need marriage as much as you need a material body. You don't need marriage. Right? Because you don't need a material body. You're Krishna's eternal servant. But if you haven't realized that, then okay, go through the Varnashram system. And the Varnashram system, the point is, or the Varnashram system is you're meant to become self-realized. That is the point. If you're not making spiritual advancement, then what is the point of your life? What is the purpose of your life if you're not making advancement? You're in the Grihastha Ashram, right? Now, Grihastha Ashram is a license for sense enjoyment. But it doesn't mean that you can just enjoy your senses. But that's not the purpose of the ashram. The purpose of the ashram is to make spiritual advancement. But there is a demarcation. In other words, there's something which divides the Grihastha Ashram from the other three ashrams. What is the difference? What's the difference between brahmacharis, vanaprasthas and sannyasis, and grihasthas? What differentiates the three ashrams from the Grihastha Ashram? Yeah, that's one thing. But it's actually the grihasthas are allowed to engage in sex life. That is the difference between the ashrams. Brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and nyasis, no sex. Grihastha ashram, sex life. Right? Because what is the material world based upon? Right? If you look in the first purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 1, you look in the purport, Prabhupada says, the active principle of the material world is sex life. The whole material world is simply going on because of sex life. One time Prabhupada was in a traffic jam in one of the big cities in the world. Right? Just like right now, there's a big traffic jam in Melbourne, in the CBD. Big traffic jam. Bumper to bumper. Right? So Prabhupada was in a traffic jam somewhere in the world in one of these big cities. They're all the same. And Prabhupada said, simply sex life. That's all it is. It's all sex. Why do we need these big buildings? Why do we need all this motor cars? And it's all sex. Right? From sex life, then the whole world manifests. Right? If people lose sex desire, the whole world stops. Imagine if everyone in the universe became a sannyasi. That's it. Material world's finished. Right? Everyone dies, goes back to Godhead, that's it. Nothing. Right? So sex life is what keeps everything going. Right? It is this attachment to sex life which keeps us in the material world. Right? We're simply in the material world because we're attached to sex. We're attached to the opposite sex. Men want to enjoy women, women want to enjoy men. That's what binds us in this material world. Right? The Varnashram system is designed to gradually lift us out of this illusion of being attached to the opposite sex. That is the point. So that our mind can become fixed on Krishna. That's why we get married, right? Because you try to stay brahmachari your whole life, right? For most people, not everyone, but for most people, if they try to stay brahmachari their whole life, they're not actually brahmacharis. Right? Krishna says in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, they are michacha. Michacha means pretender. Right? Acting like I'm renounced externally, but internally meditating on the opposite sex. So then you cannot be brahmachari. So that's why we get married. Right? So then your mind will be peaceful. Okay, you can associate with the opposite sex. Right? And by associating with the opposite sex, you become detached from this material world. Right? And when you become detached from this material world, gradually your mind becomes fixed on Krishna. That is the purpose of the Varnashram system. Krishna designed it. Chaturvanya Maya Srishtam Guna Kama Vibhagashaha. Krishna says, I designed it. Why? To gradually bring all of you out of this material world. So now, in this verse, Krishna is instructing Uddhava, what are the specific duties of a brahmachari? What are the specific duties of someone who is in the brahmachari ashram? He has specific duties. Each ashram has specific duties. That. So, what are the specific duties which are here? Now it says in this verse, for sannyasis, vanaprasthas, and brahmacharis, they should never associate with women by glancing. It means that Prabhupada says, if you're in public and you see a beautiful girl or an attractive member of the opposite sex, and you look, and then you look away, the Prabhupada says, if you look back again, then that constitutes a fall down. That creates a samskara, an impression in the mind. Right? And then later on, that will be in your subtle body. You will think of that again. That's why we have to learn to control our minds. And brahmacharis should not look at women. If you're a brahmachari and you're looking at women, what does that mean? Yeah, it means you're not a brahmachari. Yeah. It means you need to be married. Yeah. It means you're in the wrong ashram. Just like Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, he gave some seminars about Varnashrama. And he said, if you're a brahmachari and you're always thinking, should I get married? No, I shouldn't get married. If I get married, then I don't have to do my washing. But then if I get married, then I have to pay so many bills. But then I'll have nice food to eat. But then I have to wash the dishes. Like that. So if you're always thinking back and forth, right? Then, Maro says, then you should get married. Because brahmacharis don't think back and forth. Brahmacharis just think one thing. Right? Brahmacharis think, I will never get married. Right? It's not worth it. My spiritual master said to me, I was up in that double room up there in the next to Anirudha Prabhu's office up there. I was with my guru one time up there, and there were some grihasthas outside his room, and they were talking, man and woman. He was listening to the conversation. I was a brahmachari at the time, and he was listening to them talk, and then he turned to me and he looked at me and he said, it's a waste of time. He said, there is no pleasure in it. He said, there is no pleasure in it. That's a sannyasi. That's a brahmachari. That's the way he thinks. If you're not thinking like that, then, 25 years of nectar is awaiting you. Mm-hmm. Then you should get married. Right? You should go through and get purified. But if you are a brahmachari, then you will not think like that. Mm-hmm. You will not glance at women. Right? Do not be michacha. Do not wear saffron cloth and be looking at the girls dancing all the time in the kirtan. You're watching the Madhijis dancing, wearing saffron cloth. Then you're a pretender. Then get married. But don't be artificial. Don't be pretentious, because you will not get out of this material world. My spiritual master said one time, when I was listening to a lecture when I was a brahmachari, and I heard my spiritual master say on the lecture, he said, you will not get out of this material world until you realize you're in this material world. Makes sense, doesn't it? How are you going to get out if you don't realize you're in it? You've got saffron cloth on, you're a brahmachari and you're fired up, and you're a big book distributor, and you're personification of staunchness. I am a brahmachari. Sort of like that. But in your mind, right, you're still attached to the opposite sex. Right? You want to win the marathon. You want to win the marathon. You want to win the marathon. Especially, I want to beat the Madhijis. I want to win the marathon. Right? All those brahmacharinis, I will defeat them. Right? And then they will have to glorify me at the end of the marathon at the feast. I am number one. Like that. So that, it's just the mode of passion. It means that we're not actually transcending this material world. So therefore, if one is thinking like that, then he should get married. So it says here that a brahmachari does not glance at women. He does not look at women. Actually, it says that the younger brother of Ramachandra, whose name was Lakshman, when he went to the forest for 13 years with... is it 14 years or 13? 14 years with... Sita and Ram, it says that he never looked Sita in the face. He only knew Sita because he knew what her feet looked like. Right? Because he'd only ever look down. He would never look her in the face. That's a brahmachari. Does not even look women in the face. That may not be entirely practical. It may not be entirely practical. It means that you can look at the Madhijis in the face, but not for sense enjoyment. Not that you're looking in the face, but you are thinking, ah, she's very pretty. I wonder if that's the one I should marry. No. Like that. Then this is not brahmachari. So Krishna, this is Krishna speaking. This is God himself speaking. God is telling us, do you want to get out of this material world? If you want to get out of this material world, I'll tell you how. Right? If you're a brahmachari, don't glance at women. Then he says, touching. I don't think most of the brahmacharis will not do that. But if you get to the point where you want to touch the women, then get married very quickly, because it's not appropriate. The man can only touch one woman, that is the wife. That is it. If you want to touch a woman, then get married, no problem. Permission is given, license is given. But get a license, that's the point. And just like all these people, they drive without license. It's illegal. But Krishna says, you're brahmachari, right? Be brahmachari, otherwise it is illegal. Then change ashram. Conversing means chatting to the brahmacharinis or the women. If you're brahmachari, you don't converse with the women. You only speak to them for your service. You know, you don't say to them, oh, you know, it's a nice sari that you're wearing today. Right? Or, you know, how did you go on books today? Oh, that's service. No, it's none of your business. Right? Just for what is the bare necessities in your service, then you have association with the Mataji's with respect. Right? Chanakya Pandit says, all women must be seen as mother. What does mother mean? We offer respect. Mataji, we offer respect. Deal very respectfully with the women, but not this just having conversations with them for sense gratification. Just talking, just enjoying their association. Not appropriate. And then, joking or sporting. Joking with the women, sporting with the women. Not appropriate. Right? I'll dance really fired up in the kirtan because then all the brahmacharinis will look at me. Not appropriate. Like that. You're a brahmachari, you're in the kirtan, you're doing your, 90 mile an hour spins in the middle of the kirtan. Hoping that all the brahmacharinis are noticing you. Not appropriate. Like that. So Krishna is saying, neither should they ever associate with any living entity engaged in sexual activities. So we don't even see if there's some animal having sex. We don't even watch. That is brahmachari life. It's not just for brahmacharis, it's also for grihastas. That's for every ashram. We don't watch the living entities engaged in sex life. It is maya. Just like one time Prabhupada was in Krishna Balaram Mandir, and when you walk in, there's those little rooms in the corner on either side as you walk in the front gate. In the main door of the Krishna Balaram, there's two little rooms on either side. So Prabhupada walked in and he went into one of those little rooms, and Dhananjaya Prabhu, who was the temple president at the time, he was next to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada walked in and Prabhupada said, sex life. And Dhananjaya, Prabhupada walked in and Prabhupada said, illicit sex. And Dhananjaya Prabhu was just like, what's Prabhupada talking about? Prabhupada just walked in the room and said, illicit sex. And Dhananjaya Prabhu was thinking, what's going on? Is someone in the temple falling down? Or, is there something? He didn't understand. He was just looking at Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada got his cane, and Prabhupada slowly, he went like that. And in the chandelier, there were two pigeons having sex. Prabhupada said, illicit sex inside the temple. He said, get them out. In other words, what are the birds doing in the temple? There shouldn't be birds in the temple. Like that. Some devotees thought, oh, isn't it nice? Oh, the birds have got a nest up in the chandeliers. Oh, it's Vrindavan. Oh, it's all right. Prabhupada said, get them out. Illicit sex. In Krishna's temple, no living entity can perform sex life in Krishna's temple. Right? If two flies are performing sex life in the temple, get them out. Illicit sex, get out. This is the point. Prabhupada is making the point very strongly like that. Otherwise our minds begin to, just like, you know, the story of Salvari Muni underneath the water, 60,000 years underneath the water, and then he saw two fish copulating, having sex life, came out, got married, 50 wives, I think 10 children each, 50 wives. That's the power of the material energy. You have to be very careful. Prabhupada said, if I have one criticism of my followers, they do not fear Maya enough. Right? Be very careful. You know, sometimes you're on the plane going to India or something, the movies are on. You know, they have the Bollywood. You know, the boys and the girls all doing their dancing. Right? Like that. But it's very dangerous. It just creates a mood in our mind. Right? And then we become contaminated. We have to be very careful of this. So what do we do? Do we lock ourselves up in the temple all day? I can't go out there because just everywhere I look, especially go to Bombay these days, Mumbai, everywhere you look there is some poster, something like that. It's worse than Melbourne, like that. Melbourne's also like that. You go out and so much impression on the mind like that. What do you do? You know, Prabhupada said you have to inoculate yourself. Just like the doctor, when the doctor goes into the ward where the contamination is, where the disease is, he has to take some of the disease. If he's going into tuberculosis ward, he has to take some tuberculosis, some little bit, and then he develops immunity. So then when he goes there, he does not get the disease himself. So Prabhupada says, then we have to have strict sadhana, strict morning program. Right? The devotees, as much as possible, you have to have strict sadhana, strict morning program. Inoculate yourself. So when you go there, you will not get the disease. Otherwise you'll become like them. Right? You'll also develop all these material desires. And then Prabhupada said, once a year you should go to the holy dharma. And whatever contamination is there, you wash that off, and then you come back to preach in the West. Okay. So this is a very nice verse. Krishna has given so many instructions on brahmachari life. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. It means that if the grihastha ashram is conducive for one making spiritual advancement, then one does not have to renounce it. Husband and wife can stay together. But it must be seen that they're becoming attached to Krishna over time. Because if you get to the end of your life and you're still attached to your wife, or the wife's still attached to the husband, they have to take birth as man or take birth as woman. So the point is that if the ashram is peaceful and they are helping each other to become attached to Krishna, then Prabhupada says no need to renounce. You don't have to renounce the ashram. You just continue and you help each other become fully Krishna conscious, and then you can transcend things. Is that okay? Any other question or comment? Because in Kali Yuga we come from very bad backgrounds, especially Western devotees. We have illicit connections with women. Sometimes we have many girlfriends before we even become brahmachari. Right? So already consciousness is very contaminated. But you should go through brahmachari ashram, because then it makes you strong. I know myself, before I became devotee, then I had girlfriends, you know, illicit connection with the women. But then 8 years I spent as brahmachari, strict, like that. And then that makes you strong in spiritual life. Not that all that contamination has gone away, but you become strong. And then, when I got married, now I've been married for 12 years, still I'm being carried by my 8 years as brahmachari. Because it makes you strong as a devotee. So it's not that all this contamination goes away immediately, because the mind is very impure from so many this lifetime, previous lifetimes. But we practice sincerely. And then if you are able to, then you stay brahmachari whole life. But generally, we see it is difficult. So therefore, no problem. Prabhupada, Krishna, they have given us Grihastha ashram. I know myself in Grihastha, I've been brahmachari in Grihastha for a number of years. I don't find one to be more so much beneficial than other. Not that, oh, you know, I was so much better then, now, you know, it's not like now I'm fallen. Bhagavatam says you get married, you go into deep, dark well. You know, it's not like that. You know, still we're making advancement, that's the point. Strong brahmachari, strong grihastha. Point is that you have to be strong in spiritual life, very fixed, very focused in your Krishna consciousness. The same thing. You know. Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said, grihastha brahmachari. Same thing. You're a grihastha, but you're still brahmachari. Right? And still very focused on your service to Guru and to Krishna. So this is the point. Whether you're in one ashram or other ashram, you just stay focused. You just stay in the ashram. Prabhupada describes in 8th canto, in the pastime of Gajendra. Then Gajendra was fighting the crocodile in the water. So he was losing because crocodile was in his element. Gajendra should be on the land. So he was losing. So Prabhupada says there, you should stay in the ashram, which makes you strongest when you're fighting with Maya. So when you're young, you know, and you're very focused, then be brahmachari. At least 3 years in the ashram, brahmachari. And then, if you keep going, that's good. You know. But then if you feel now, I'd be better if I'm in Grihastha ashram, you get married, no problem, and then keep serving. Not that we get in Grihastha ashram and then everything just becomes Maya and we just, you know, forget Krishna. No, still very focused. Serving Guru, serving Krishna. Is it okay? Anything else? Uddhava?
Yes.
I told everything.
Yes. We have a fear of killing
Uddhava also.
No,
he is Uddhava. Uddhava is Uddhava. In Dwarka, in the spiritual world, then Uddhava is always with Krishna. When Krishna comes to the material world, he brings Dwarka, he brings Mathura, he brings Vrindavan. Okay. So when Krishna comes to Vrindavan, he brings all the bridge buses with him. When he comes to Dwarka, he brings all the Dwarka buses with him. So Uddhava is his eternal associate in Dwarka. His eternal associate. The Yadu dynasty are Krishna's eternal associates. Yeah, he's a member of the Yadu. He's a Yadava. He's a member of the Yadu dynasty. So. As for who his parents are, I can't remember. But if you look it up, then there's one scripture called the Hari Vamsha. This describes Krishna's dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, describes the pastimes in Dwarka. So if you read that, then it will tell you everything. Any other questions?
Can you talk a little more about Vanaprastha?
Yeah, Vanaprastha means that the husband and wife, they've gone through Grihastha Rasha.
Can you see that it can change all the upcoming year of Vanaprastha? Single women, single men.
Like that. So traditionally what it means is that the husband and wife went through Grihastha Ashram, all the children got married, And then they travel together, they give up their home, their griha, and they go to the vana, or the forest. Yeah? What it means in this day and age, it means they go travelling and preaching, just like you have Sankarshan Prabhu and his wife Vishnu Priya Mataji. So they're vana prasas. They're travelling around preaching, or they reside in, it means they haven't got like a permanent home, and they travel and preach, or they stay in the holy dharms, or, you know, they're like that. So their life is given to Krishna, they assist each other. So then, if you're a single woman or a single man, then you've gone through Grihastha Ashram, you're married, your kids are grown up. Then, if there is not a husband or not a wife, then you simply serve Krishna. That is the basically the system. You fully dedicate your activities to Krishna. Like that. If you don't have a husband or wife, then what is your... you don't have a choice. Does that give any clarity to what you... Yeah. It's because ISKCON is young. That's all. Because we're only 40 years old. And the GBC are creating in Mayapur, and I think also in Vrindavan, they're creating retirement villages now. So that devotees can go, and they can, after giving a full life of service, they can retire in the holy dharm with protection. Like that. So there'll be women's ashrams. Even in Mayapur already, there's a women's ashram, right? Kunti Bhavan. Where some of our devotees who are friends of ours, their husband, like one devotee we know, her husband passed away. And now she is like a vanaprastha. She's a more older woman, she's 50 or so. She doesn't have a husband, and now she's living in the holy dharm with other women who are in a similar situation, and they're given shelter and protection, and they're just fully serving Krishna. So ISKCON, it's only because we're young, that's all. But in due course of time, these facilities will develop and devotees will have this shelter. But the basic principle is that we feel that Krishna will give us shelter. If you give yourself to Krishna, he will look after you. You don't have to have anxiety. We have anxiety, but we don't have to actually. Because Krishna says, I will always protect my devotees. He will always maintain his devotees.
Because the older single woman is there, so eventually you have a nest egg, because that protection is not there.
Yeah.
For instance, financial,
yeah.
Social.
Yeah, so then we have to be a little proactive at this point. But in due course of time, these facilities will be given. In due course of time. ISKCON is not so developed yet. We're only 40 years old. Like Christianity is 2,000 years old. You know, we're not developed enough yet. But these things will come. But yeah, you do have to be proactive at this point in time.
I think that message will get out.
Yeah, it will. It will get out. The Jivas are already talking about these things, so these things will happen. But it's only because we're a young group, that's all. Everything will happen, but we have to be a little tolerant because, Prabhupada will watch all this. Prabhupada understands we're very young, it's not developed yet, and he will see everyone, and he will give special consideration and concession for those who do some austerity on his behalf. Yeah, it's kind of just young, that's all. We have to be a little tolerant at this point in time. But we don't have to have any anxiety. Prabhupada and Krishna are looking after all of us beyond what we can imagine or expect. So just stick in the boat and soon we'll be in a very different place. Any other questions or comments?
What you're saying is you have strong faith and determination in certain things.
Every devotee has to develop that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yes.